of elders and deacons. We'll see in 1 Timothy 3:11, we'll read the whole verse in just a minute, but the phrase at the beginning of that verse, even so must their wives be. And so we're going to talk about the critical role, matter of fact, in the home or in the family, in eldership, in deacons, in anything you do. The role of the wife is huge. When people say, oh, churches don't, you know, they exclude women. They don't use women to the greatest of their ability. Well, I don't know about that. The role of women is very, very powerful. And frankly, I'll tell you, in local churches, if local churches have peace and harmony, it's going to be to a large extent because of the wives and the women in the congregation. I'm just giving you my opinion, but over the years, when you have strong, godly women who serve the Lord, know their place in the home, but work on the things they can, it is one of the most powerful elements in a local church. And you watch that. You just notice that. That's a very true element oftentimes. But we're talking tonight about what must be. Here is the verse. This one verse will be our study tonight. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Now, I want you to notice there, that could refer to only deacons. It's in the context of qualifications of deacons. This was not found in the qualification of elders. But I do believe that there will deal with both elders and deacons. Because as we talk about why this is important, if it's important for the deacons to have such a wife, I will guarantee you it is really important for elders to have such wives. And so we'll start there, looking at it from the standpoint of deacons' wives, and then we'll talk about some practical things that this involves, why that is so important. It might be that you have a man that's qualified, and the woman does not have those qualities. And I would say in that case, that man is not ready yet to be appointed either as an elder or a deacon. Now again, it's not the end of the world. It's not like, oh, I'm not qualified right now, therefore I'll never be qualified. No, no, no. It may be some things that need to be worked on. But I'll say this, and again, you may say, I'm not trying to be flattery here, and I'm not trying to, insincere. But I've seen this congregation, the women in this congregation, one reason why we have the peace we have is because of the kind of wives we have and mothers and single girls. We've been very blessed. And I think because of that, I think we've got a good outlook for future men to be appointed. All right, we talk about a controversial area quickly, and then we're going to go into the qualifications. Real quick, I want to make a clarification from last week that I appreciate being brought out to me. We were talking about when you see these qualifications, even tonight, when you see these qualifications, they're qualifications, for the most part, that every Christian should have. Now, let me mention one thing. We're talking about the qualifications dealing with character, or if somebody's in a home, how they should handle their children. But there's one thing that you don't have to pursue in the qualifications to be a faithful Christian, and that is you don't have to be married to be a faithful Christian. And you don't have to seek a mate to be a faithful Christian. So I didn't probably make that clear last time. The Lord does not demand that you be married. 1 Corinthians 7, we can look at that. I think in wisdom, for me, I needed a mate. But you may be seeking a mate, not be able to find a mate. And I was determined in my life, if that's the case, I'll stay single. I want to find somebody to help me get to heaven. But I want to clarify out here, I don't want to encourage somebody that's single, whether their decision to stay single or they would like not to be single, but that's their situation right now. I hope I didn't discourage you in talking about these qualifications. I was really talking about the idea of character that every Christian ought to pursue. In the past, when I've dealt with these outlines and talked with people, I spent just a little bit of time on this because I would think, surely everybody knows better. But I want to tell you what I'm about to talk to you about here. Should we appoint women as elders and deacons? Right now, and even in this area, there's strong push, very radical push toward that. There, if you can type it up, Churches of Christ, elders, women deacons, you will find all kinds of articles, a directory of churches where you can go to. There's a publication called Wineskins. The editor is local here. Really nice guy. I like him a lot. But they have tons of material advocating that. And so, again, let you just be aware that you have the major universities, David Lipscomb, Abilene Christian, Pepperdine, that have been associated with Church of Christ, very strongly advocating those things, very publicly, volumes of material. And if you want interested in the links, I can give them to you. And so because of that, I say, let's just be aware of this and talk about, should we also have women elders and deacons? There are some translations, and I was in a study just actually a few weeks ago, and the girl looked at this and said, look at my translation. And they look in 1 Timothy 3:11, it says, women must likewise be dignified, not malicious, gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. Now, the earlier other translations say their wives. But here, this translation says women must likewise be dignified. Now, that's significant. And she said, my translation says women. And that would almost indicate that, well, here's qualifications for a deacon, and here's women who can be deacons. And so I think that's not a good translation. But there are things that we need to consider. Would there be separate qualifications for women deacons and men deacons? That doesn't make sense if that was the what was being done here by Paul. Here's another passage we want to look at. Romans 16:1, the same word for deacon is found here. I commend to you our sister Phoebe, who is a servant of the church, which is in Cenchrea. I didn't look at translations. Does anybody have a translation that says deacon or deaconess? This is another major verse that is used by brethren to say there were women deacons. And again, if the scriptures teach that, then that's what we ought to do. So the answer to me is simple here. But before I answer it, how would you answer that? They're saying that women are mentioned as deacons in 1 Timothy 3, that you actually have the word that could easily be translated deaconess. The female form of the word deacon is found in Romans 16:1, and that she is not just a deacon in a general sense, she is a deacon of the church. How would you answer that if that was thrown at you? And that's right. Yeah. You have the in the passage, both for elders and deacons, there's to be the husband of one wife. And so it's obvious in my view of 1 Timothy 3 when you understand that this is not just women, but the wives of the deacons or the elders and deacons, and that word deacon is really a word that can have a couple different meanings. In Romans 16:1, it says that here was a woman that was a servant. Then let's look at a couple of things. The word deacon, that is a Greek word, just like our word servant is an English word. The word elder is an English word. There's a Greek word for elder. What you'll find in the scriptures and even in our life, you can have a word that has different meanings. For instance, that word servant is used in a lot of verses. Here is just talking about every Christian being a deacon or a servant. If anyone serves me, let him follow me, and where I am, there my servant will be also. You have the idea of word minister. That's the idea of a servant. We're all ministers in the general sense. Here, Paul talking about his own work, he says, but in all things we commend ourselves as ministers of God. 2 Corinthians 6:4. 1 Thessalonians 3:2, and sent Timothy, our brother and minister of God. Was Timothy a deacon? Well, he's deacon in the sense that he was a servant. And so, as you see women described as deacons, That is the general, most common usage of that word. The word deacon means servant. And so, yes, we have women deaconesses. As a matter of fact, I joke about this, but I'm really serious about it. We have some very fine ladies, married, unmarried, that are wonderful deaconesses in this church. And I recognize that, and I oftentimes will come up to some. I said, you know, you're our deaconess. You do so much good. You do just so much service in the background. But you see, that deaconing used in that sense, there's no qualification in appointment. There is simply what a person does. Every Christian is to be a deacon. So, and really, in that sense, we don't need to appoint you. You're already it. In the broad sense, every Christian is a deacon. But there's a specific sense as well. And so, again, I think we can see that. Again, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this. You've got it in the outline if you wanted to look at that. So now, any comments on that section? Should we appoint women as deacons or elders? Okay. And by the way, if you're going further, let's go look in the scriptures and see men that are named as elders, men that are named as deacons. Do you have women named as that in the process? When you had the situation, even though the word deacon is not used in Acts chapter 6, every one of the ones that the church appointed in that were male. Seven men of good report. And so here we see under the direction of the apostles, as the church is being set up, we see this public office that men were selected. I think that's significant. Now, let's make sure we get to the qualifications here. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, New King James, grave in another translation. The word grave is that is prudent, dignified, and of sound judgment. She must not be foolish, unconcerned, and indifferent to the work of her husband. That's, by the way, true for every Christian. You should have this characteristic married or unmarried, but if you're married, it's even more significant in the sense that when you're married, you have a relationship with your husband. If you have children, you have obligations. Let's see if we can develop this. We can talk about it in this sense where you talk about the word grave or the idea of reverent. We can also talk about dress and behavior, this similar concept here where the word modest is used, 1 Timothy 2, 9, and 10. In like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. Let's talk about the heart here, 1 Timothy 2. Here, if there's a woman that is grave, that she would seek modesty, what is the idea of modesty here? I'm not just talking about clothes, I'm talking about the heart here. What is at the root of a heart of someone who is modest? What's that? Put others ahead of themselves. They put God first. It's not all about me. It's the idea of not trying to draw undue attention to yourself, whether it be in clothing or language or other things. And so that would be it's someone that takes serious about their responsibilities. Let me just throw this out to you. We can talk about elders or deacons. What if someone has a wife, and we can even talk about anyone, that is imprudent, undignified, and does not have sound judgment? What if we had a wife that was foolish and indifferent to the work of her husband? What happens in that situation? They're not qualified. I can tell you of some wonderful men that I know that probably could have been tremendous evangelists and teachers in the church, but they had a problem with their wife. Let's just use the preacher as an example, again, because I know a little bit about it. Not that we're anything special. But if you're a preacher and you have a wife that's really not interested in your work, could that be a problem for you? hey, let's go move over here to this church that's having trouble. Let's move over here to another town. And have you ever heard this term that if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy, you know, in the home? I've known of men that literally moved and her wife would not move with them and stayed in another town. And man had to finally discontinue his local work to go back. You think a congregation wouldn't say that? I think you can be a preacher and have a wife that doesn't have these qualifications. So I would understand that. That can exist and that won't be unscriptural. But man, oh man, it will weaken your influence. And so that's one illustration. Any others along these lines? The effects if you have a woman that is not committed to the work? I'll tell you what, if I didn't have a wife committed to this work, I couldn't do it. You know something, let me put it this way. Should an elder open up their home, have people over for meals? You know, I'm still like the single guy when it comes to housekeeping and cooking, you know. If somebody else doesn't do it or help me, you know, I can fry eggs and bacon, you know. I can, move the trash out of the way and clear the table for somebody a little bit. But, you know, there's some skill sets that are not strong for me. In the social realm, if you don't have the woman helping you and committed to it, And so, just a lot of things we might not have thought about. And let me say this as well. Being an elder or a deacon, you don't have quite the heat on you as a deacon. An elder, you do. Do you think a woman might be affected when there's pressure about decisions that are being made and the direction a congregation is taken? I've known a situation where elders stepped down because their wives could not handle the pressure. They cared about the work, but they didn't know how to handle that as you're carrying weight on your shoulder. And so, as we look at all of these qualifications, and really practically speaking in life, you want a mate that will be connected to you, serving the Lord. As 1 Peter 3:4 describes it, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. You know what I've oftentimes asked my wife to do as a preacher? This is not as an elder, but as a preacher. I've been in situations where I knew that we were going to have to work through some problems, and there were some terrible attitudes toward me. And I also knew there were terrible attitudes toward my wife. Not that she did anything, but she was married to me. That's what happens oftentimes in leadership. People in it, and I've asked her, I said, please, don't take this personal, what's happening. Would you pull yourself back from this and let me handle it? And if I get my head beat up, just don't help me to be bitter. Help me to be happy. Be forgiving to these people. Now, women can't always do that. There's a challenge there. But if you have a wife that can do it, not that I couldn't be provoked to bitterness, but if things aren't good in my home, that's what I have a problem. That is the struggle. And a good godly woman who can, you know, take the things and not be pulled into negativity is a tremendous asset to the husband. And this is just true in life. It's certainly true in elders and deacons. And if you're going to become an elder, you've got to have thick skin. And you've got to be willing to see brethren and think the best of them, even when they may not be saying the best thing to you or having the best attitude towards you. Again, we're talking about deacons specifically in the context, but how about not slanderers? Likewise, their lives must be reverent, not slanderers. Somebody tell me why this term has significance, great significance, when it's dealing with women. And this is not a prejudicial term here. I'm not saying men are better than women or anything like that, but actually their skill sets, I think women generally have in certain areas that men generally don't have, and there's always exceptions to this. But what does slanderer involve, slandering? What process creates a slander? I'm looking for something very basic. What's that? Gossip, and it involves what? Talking. There we go. Have you seen the statistics on that, on how many words the average man says in a day and how the average woman, I mean, I could have a phone conversation with Nathan. Nathan, how you doing? I said, I'm doing great. Had a good day. Dad, how about you? Really good. I said, man, good talking to you. You know, hang up. Now, that's maybe a little exaggeration. But sometimes, you know, we guys, you know, the idea of verbalizing everything about your day to somebody else, that's just not really something needful for me. But it is for my wife. She feels better when she tells me the details of her day as long as I don't jump in and fix it. You know, and that's okay. I have to remind myself of that. I will tell you, sometimes I want to fix everything. And so, so one who does a lot of talking, as a rule, don't want to get in too much trouble here. Then here's an area where it talks about what happens with words when we don't think them through. Slanderers. Fascinating Greek term for this. I've been actually thinking about writing or preaching on this topic. I mean, I'm thinking about politics right now and how much slandering is used. I keep very distressed what I see in the political realm. But the word for slander is the word diabolos. What do you think of that word when you hear diabolos? The devil. Satan. It means accusing falsely is used as a noun in 1 Timothy 3:11, where the reference is of those who are given to finding fault with the demeanor and conduct of others and spreading their innuendos and criticisms in the church. That's from Vines. Churches go through phases. And if you look back at this church, you look back at other churches when they went through really difficult conflicts, you'll generally find an element of that conflict would be a group of women that had become negative and bitter. And they would have a group where they would share that and they would influence others. And by the way, again, I want to be clear. I think our strength has been the care of our women here and how they use their tongues. I really say that sincerely. Not that there's not weaknesses that exist, but if we have a good atmosphere here, and I believe we do, it's because that kind of thing, people have tried to fight against it. And so, you have whoever it is, you have those that are busybodies, tale-bearers, or idle gossip. Oh, man, there is trouble. Let's talk about this. If there is, let's say, someone that's become bitter, they'll tend to speak what's on their mind, and many times the things on their mind ought not to be on their mind. They have made a judgment, an unrighteous judgment. They've been taking it personal on something that actually didn't happen. And then they start recruiting others to think that way. What are the consequences of that? In this case, a married woman. What are the consequences of that? Slandering. What, it devours you?
It divides.
It divides, yes. It will in time. Let's keep adding. I want to have just quick points here.
Friction.
Friction creates friction. People don't trust. You know, when you, I tell you, people can misunderstand you. Preaching, oh, there's so many times I'll preach a lesson. Do you realize you said this way and admit that? I'm going, oh, thank you for telling me. I appreciate people doing that. And what would be bad if somebody heard something and they took it the wrong way and then started talking to others? And again, I haven't seen that here. But it's very common as a speaker. When you have someone that doesn't, that they don't have control, they don't have a process of being able to discern right and wrong, and then they speak too much, how do you feel about being around somebody like that? It makes people harder to want to be with them. And end up, and that person, if they're thinking bad of somebody else, they tend not want to be with them. You see the process. How about the husband of a wife that does this? Is there any consequences for him? I hope, I pray, that I want to live as I should as a Christian. If I started doing some things I shouldn't, and my wife was totally innocent in that, it would affect her, wouldn't it? It would. And if my wife started doing something that was wrong and was very public and let's say I didn't know about it, you know, that could affect me. But generally speaking, when we have a problem like this, and we're talking about speaking with other people affecting the church, should the husband know about it? I'm talking about factually. Should he know about it? He should, shouldn't he? And unfortunately, when you have a situation like that, and it's going back, like say, we're talking about the qualification of elders of ruling the home well, not only do you need to see a problem, you need to confront it. And if the home is what it ought to be, then he should, as old Barney Fife would say, nip it in the bud and work away. Now, if he can't do it, then he's got a poor marriage. And then again, you can see here, well, while this is not the qualification of elders, but the deacon who would have a wife that is not under control, this will affect his influence. And that's important. Comments? Questions? This is going to be the essence of analyzing all of these characteristics. The idea of sober, it means one who has self-control over the mind and body. So one in control. There's a passage about just godly women that they need to be under control. I thought I had that passage up there, but I didn't. In Titus 2, 3, and 4, it talks about what aged women ought to do. And there's qualifications given there. Let's read that real quick. Titus 2, 3, and 4. I thought I had put that in, but I evidently didn't make it in. Yeah, I think it may be later in the PowerPoint, but let's read that now. Titus 2, 3, and 4. Again, if you'll notice the passage here, this is not just about deacons. It's about all women that are older women. It says, older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, here's our other name, or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands, their children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. We see this is what older women ought to be, and they're teaching the younger women to be this. And so these qualifications are for all Christians. And so it's the idea of one who is in control of the tongue, control of their lives. Faithful in all things is the other qualification. And the idea is the word pistos is for the word for faithful. It would deal with being a faithful Christian. We can talk about the place of a woman in the assembly, 1 Corinthians 14:34. She's not to speak, she's to be silent in the assembly. That would eliminate women teachers, preachers, when making announcements. 1 Timothy 2:12, in general, I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. I think this would be another restriction, I think, dealing with the teaching of the Word of God in other settings outside the assembly. And you'd see one that's faithful in attendance, faithful in reverence, faithful in taking care of their children. We're not talking about perfection. We're talking about faithfulness. And again, Titus 2, I have it posted here. In the outline of where it talks about those characteristics. Let's develop a little more. And again, there's so many areas we can talk about. I think I have this on the chart. Let me talk about this area. Again, we're more getting into elders here than deacons. But let's suppose that there's a decision-making process going on in the church. And whether it's elders alone or elders working with deacons and trying to make a decision, would it be possible or likely that the wives of the elders or deacons may know a little bit about what's going on? It's really, really important here that as you're working through a problem, there's some problems you have to deal with privately and carefully. There's some problems that never should become public. There's some problems that should be made public at the right time, or not just problems, but things that you're going to do. If you have the wife that jumps out ahead of the men and maybe talks when they ought not to. We're not talking about slander here, but maybe just telling what's going on. Could that be a problem? I know of a congregation that a dear brother was at, very close to me, and they ended up losing their eldership. And one of the problems, they were dealing with some really difficult problems, and there were some people that needed to be confronted, and one of the elder's wives, without consulting with the elder, wrote a really long email rebuking and challenging the brother that needed to be rebuked and challenged. That was not good in this circumstance. The husband needed to be the one to do that. And it ended up, the emotion of that was so strong, the husband ended up stepping down because the wife simply could not handle that pressure. And so there's a lot of illustrations along these lines. If you're going to be an elder or even a deacon, this involves your wife. And you've got a wonderful wife that will support you and help you and learn how to take things in stride. That's wonderful. But just like the preacher who may have a situation with a wife that's not supporting his work, it's certainly true for the elder and deacon that we need to understand that there's going to be a change that comes when you're appointed an elder or deacon. A change in how the congregation looks at you. A change in maybe how they look at the aspects of your life and your children's. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but you have to psychologically and mentally get ready if you're ended up in putting that position. Comments or questions? Yes, Dave. Oh, wow. Already. Okay. That's too fast. Right. And I appreciate this congregation. We don't look for praises, elders or deacons. I pray you don't perceive us as doing that. We do appreciate the prayers, though. And I appreciate the prayers for the wives. Because, frankly, a good marriage, you're a team. You're a team. And I will tell you, you got men that are qualified to be deacons or elders. I want to tell you what. The wife of that man had a large role of why that's so. And so just understand that. Now, this is such a challenging process. The local congregations making it work together is very, very challenging. But let's be thankful to our women. And I hope we come out with that, to be very thankful for godly women. Because I will tell you, I know that was the greatest blessing God has given me outside of salvation, is the wife that she's given me. And I know many of you would say the same thing. And so, but this is very practical, real life things. We need to make sure that these qualifications are met by those of the wives of elders and deacons. All right. Well, any comments before we close our class? I want to talk further about process later. I also want to talk about again, I'm going to try to write an article, do a sermon, very similar to the article that was on the back of this outline I urge you all to read. If you haven't read it, yeah, let me plug in for that before we close. We've got outlines still in the back. And at the back of the outlines, there is appointing elders and deacons article. Please get a chance to read that if you haven't. Give us feedback on the class, too. We're trying to prepare the congregation for our next step. We'll let you know when that's going to occur. And we'll have more to say about how we make it happen. The big challenge now. We've read it. We understand the qualifications. We can take 2 weeks and we can appoint elders and deacons, right? It's possible. But we need to talk a little more about how do you do that? How do you go to the process of making it happen? And not only are we going to teach on that, we want to get feedback from you on that. We want to do this in the most expedient way to help the congregation, like those in Acts 6, to look out from among you men and women who have these qualifications. Thank you for your attention this evening.